Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We are expecting a news conference by President George W. Bush any minute or any second. It is scheduled for 11 o'clock. And there is a lot that the president might say after this tumultuous campaign and then his election victory yesterday. Also, his promise yesterday to try to unite the country. It's something that even he and his advisors have admitted was one of the failures of his first administration. And Tim Noah from Slate.com is still with us until the news conference begins. Tim, why do you think the president is calling a news conference today?
I don't know. Perhaps he's going to talk about his agenda for the next 4 years. He wants to privatize Social Security. He wants to reform, quote unquote, the tax code. Maybe he wants to talk at greater length about that. Maybe he wants to talk about reconciliation. Although I have to say, I feel as though we've been there before. There was talk about reconciliation after 2000, and it didn't last very long.
CNN is reporting that John Ashcroft, the attorney general, is likely to leave the administration. You think there might be cabinet announcements this early?
It's a little quick for cabinet announcements, but you never know. There's been talk that Ashcroft would leave. There's been talk that Rumsfeld would leave, and there's been talk that Colin Powell would leave.
Yeah. I'm looking, by the way, at an email that someone just sent me of Rui Teixeira's latest blog post relating to what we were talking about before regarding the emerging Democratic majority theory not holding, at least in this election. And he writes, lessons Democrats can draw from Bush's victory include the limits of mobilization.
Well, I'd say amen to that. I think the Democrats did a fantastic job mobilizing in this election.
Although, what happened to the young voters?
They worked so hard for those young voters, I'm beginning to suspect those young voters just aren't going to come. I don't know what else the Democrats could be doing to try to appeal to young voters.
Well, there was certainly an illusion that was created then of a mobilization of young voters through the Dean campaign, through MoveOn.org, through the meetups, the blogs, all of that. The media, if you will, had the impression that that was going to happen, that there was something new happening out there among young adult Americans.
They did, and maybe the problem was that those numbers were exaggerated, or maybe some of those people who showed up at meetups ended up being more spectators than participants.
Yeah.
I just can't say.
Yeah, and I guess it's also a question, as I was saying to a previous guest, of how you measure growth. The whole electorate expanded by so much in this election that the youth vote expanded as well. It just didn't expand enough that it became a larger percentage of the population than it was before.
That's right.
So I don't know whether we consider that growth or lack of growth.
Right.
All right, another point from Rui Teixeira's post, the limits of anti-Bushism.
Well, again, I'd have to say amen to that. There couldn't have been a more aggressive, combative campaign coming from the Democrats than the one they waged this time out. I think it helped, but it didn't get you all the way there. There had to be some other component that obviously was missing.
And finally, he addresses what you were saying a minute ago, the need for white working class support. And he says, given this sense of cultural alienation, it must be questioned whether candidates like Gore or Kerry can ever really be viable with these voters.
Right. Well, I would say that they have to find a way. You can't have a Democratic Party that exempts the working class. You'd have to call it something else. This is supposed to be the party of ordinary people, of working people, and there has to be a way to reach out to these people without pandering to such things as belief in creationism or adopting some ridiculous stylistic changes that the white working class would see through in a minute.
Right, and he seems to frame it in terms of stylistic issues, because he says, I had hoped that an effective campaign could overcome this obstacle by, in effect, using wedge Democratic issues like health care or jobs, but the
stem cells was a big one as well.
Yes, but the messenger appears to matter a great deal, just as having a message does. Well, I think we're seconds away from President Bush's news conference. And he promised in his victory speech yesterday to reach out and help to unify the country, something that even he admits has been a failure of his administration. What do you think that might mean?
I don't know, but I wouldn't bet the farm on it. At this point, I have to say I am very, very suspicious of George Bush's promise that he wants to unite rather than divide America. He divided America very thoroughly over the last 4 years. After
quick follow-up question. National Journal is reporting that it's possible that Bush could announce Miguel Estrada as a Supreme Court nominee and the resignation of Rehnquist. If that happens, would you consider Estrada a unifying or dividing nominee?
I don't know anything about Estrada, so I'd have to take a pass on that. One thing, though, that's been pointed out by Slate's legal correspondent, Dahlia Lithwick, is that liberals don't need to worry too much about replacing Rehnquist, because you couldn't, it's not going to change the composition of the court except in a favorable way. You couldn't find a justice more conservative than William Rehnquist to begin with. So the greater worry would be if a more moderate justice were being replaced by a conservative
justice. True, though it does lock in Rehnquist politics for another 30 years or however long this justice would stay on the court.
Well, status quo beats things getting worse.
And it was interesting to see in the New York paper's editorial pages today how much the Supreme Court was mentioned as the overriding issue. The Wall Street Journal, sort of a New York paper, urging Bush to appoint more justices like Scalia and Miguel Estrada by name, who it says would have enough Democratic support to win, although he's conservative. And he and on the other hand, you had the New York Times and the Daily News saying, you know, please, by all means, don't make this an ideological court any more than it already is.
Well, I think the president's already made clear that this is going to be an ideological court in his comments in the debate when he invoked the Dred Scott decision. You remember that was a puzzling moment for a lot of people.
And going way back to 2000 when he said by name that he wanted more justices like Scalia and Thomas. But it's a different moment now, at least it could be, because he doesn't have to worry about electoral politics anymore. And so you wonder if he now just takes the Bush Unbound approach, as the New York Post editorial headline had it today, and does whatever he wants, basically, or if he feels more that his legacy depends somewhat on uniting the country more, and that might require somewhat of a different approach.
Well, I think we have to assume that that Bush will not want to be conciliatory until he presents evidence to the contrary.
Yeah. Anything else that you think might come up in a news conference? Will he? Well, what do you think the reporters will ask him? What would you ask him?
I would ask about what he's going to do in the next 4 years, because I don't think he has much of an agenda. He certainly, in foreign policy, he certainly is not going to be able to extend the United States military anywhere else, because it's tied up in Iraq for the foreseeable future. Domestically, there's been practically no domestic policy for the last 4 years. To begin with, except for tax cuts. His tax reform will probably be more tax cuts for the wealthy. The journalist Daniel Altman, I think, has done a wonderful job documenting that the pattern of the Bush tax cuts really has been to shift taxation away from labor and onto capital, which means away from rich people and onto middle class and low income people. So I think his feet should be held to the fire about that. But mostly, I think he really doesn't know what he's going to do in the next 4 years, and it would be interesting to see if he's able to put any words to that.
And with respect to the Middle East, this is another area, and by the Middle East I mean Israeli-Palestinian conflict. This is something that he may have to deal with more than perhaps he wants to deal with. Yasser Arafat is reportedly in a coma this morning and may be close to death. And I don't know if you noticed, but Tony Blair went out of his way to make an appearance in Britain yesterday and specifically congratulate President Bush on his reelection and, you know, say that he's glad that Britain stood with the United States in Iraq, but also then urged the president to take a more active role in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict than he did before. Did you happen to see that?
I didn't, but I do think that that it would be wise for the Bush administration to get engaged in the question of who's going to succeed Yasser Arafat. The United States obviously has an enormous stake in that, and for negotiations to proceed, there will have to be a successor to Arafat who really believes in some kind of reconciliation.
Any names to attach to that, or aren't you familiar enough with Palestinian politics?
I don't have any names, but I'd be surprised if the United States isn't already involved in some sort of discussions about who is going to succeed Arafat and what the United States can do to encourage a more moderate faction.
All right. I'll tell you what. We are expecting President Bush's news conference momentarily. This is 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC. My guest, Tim Noah from Slate.com. We've been expecting it momentarily since 11 o'clock. So let's open up the phones now for people who voted for President Bush just to tell us what you would like to hear him say at this news conference, what you would like to hear him set out for his second term agenda. And while you're at it, and we may have to cut this short and do it longer at another time, tell Democrats what you think they don't understand about you or Republicans, since we are at such a divided and in many cases angrily divided moment in our nation's history right now. 212-267-WNYC, 267-9692. For people who voted for President Bush, what would you like to see him come out and announce right now? If, in fact, he's going to announce William Rehnquist's resignation from the U.S. Supreme Court, do you want to see more of a blank slate justice like his father nominated, David Souter? Do you want to see more of a moderate? Do you want to see another Antonin Scalia or Clarence Thomas on the bench? If, in fact, he's going to announce a new Secretary of State, if Colin Powell really does resign, do you want to see him reach across party lines, as one report suggested that he might do today, and nominate Sam Nunn, the former Democratic senator from Georgia, as Secretary of State? Or do you want him to try to end the moderate versus more radical divisions that have existed between the State Department and the Pentagon in the first Bush administration, and appoint somebody who's more in line with a Donald Rumsfeld or a Richard Pearl or a Wolfowitz? 212-267-WNYC, 267-9692, as we await President Bush's news conference, expected any minute, maybe any second. Steve in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
Hi.
Well, the number one thing that I'm hoping that he's going to do in his next administration is the whole privatizing of Social Security and hopefully simplifying the tax code. I think that if people really understood the Social Security thing, we could do far better. Many people just pay into the system their whole lives and never, if you die young, you never collect a dime out of it. So, I mean, I think people, they think of it as a pension, but it's really not. It's actually retirement insurance, they call it. So, I think that I'm hoping that we can do something like that. I'm hoping that they don't go for stock market things, because I think that that's just foolish, both politically and otherwise. It should be, the money should be put into some sort of bond, which could even help finance the cost that it would have to the government. So basically privatizing Social Security is a big issue for me.
Right. And anything you would say about what Democrats don't get about Republicans?
Well, apparently, being a white male, I don't have low enough self-esteem to be a Democrat. I mean, apparently, if you're a white male, you have no place in the Democratic Party. So I guess I don't hate myself enough to be a Democrat.
Ouch. Well, that's not entirely true, according to the exit polls, but I appreciate your call. And Tim, no, you know, it was interesting to see from the exit polls how Republican white males are compared to any other demographic by race and gender. I don't know if you know this, but I was going over this with our listeners yesterday. Even in New York State, white males voted more for Bush than for Kerry.
Right. I mean, that the gender gap lives. I mean, this is something that was identified in the 80s. And for a long time, I have to say, I thought it was complete nonsense. But I think it maybe it isn't nonsense. It's certainly been with us for a while.
Apparently, the gender gap was a little bit smaller than in 2000. And yet, now I don't have those exit poll notes in front of me anymore, but there was a slight majority of white males for Bush in New York State. Among white females, it broke more like the state as a whole, which was roughly 55-60% for Kerry, about 40% for Bush. So, you know, this means, I don't know, in households, there's a gender gap.
Well, I think there's a bit of a gender gap in President Bush's own household. I think.
What do you mean?
We've seen evidence that that Laura Bush is attempts to be, I think she fails to be, a somewhat moderating influence on her husband. She's chided him when he's spoken out in kind of too hawk-like and aggressive a way. I think she probably supports the tax agenda, so I wouldn't see a gender gap there. But at least based on just a few sort of snippets that we've seen in public, I think it even occurs to some extent within that very solidly Republican family.
Edward in Clifton, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I'm calling because I don't know whether he'll do this on the press conference, but overall I believe that the exit poll showed that those who voted for Bush, the most important issue is the moral values. And I really want to see those maintained and propounded during his administration. And
and what does that term, moral values, mean to you in policy terms?
It means Defense of Marriage Act. And one thing that I'd like to clarify for those who maybe don't understand that is that protecting a social institution like marriage does not mean hate of individual people who choose to live in a different way. You know, I see it as like a hijacking of an institution that has strong Christian, Judeo-Christian roots in all the monotheistic religions, and to want to take that institution and then use it to validate a lifestyle which is contrary to the scriptures, I feel that's a radically different thing than accusing us as Christians of being people who hate those who live in a homosexual lifestyle.
And Edward, I'm going to have to leave it there. This is a conversation that I want to have and we should continue, but now President Bush is taking the podium. Tim Noah, thank you. We go live to President Bush's news conference.